We're better than that. We are so much better. We are a better country.
Are we? Are you sure?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you.
From Pacifica Radio's KPFK in Los Angeles.
It's so hard to keep
this is your broadcast, as heard on 90.7 FM in LA. 91.7 FM KYAQ on the Oregon Central Coast. 93 FM WLRI in lovely Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And coast to coast and around the globe on kpfk.org. On the Stitcher app, on the TuneIn app. Streaming on the Progressive Voices channel. Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly. FYI Nation, Radio or Not, Radio Free Brooklyn. And, of course, Radio Sputnik, 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow from bradblog.com with you here for another thrilling, action-packed adventure that we call The Bradcast. Thank you for joining us today. Before I forget, if you have any thoughts, any questions, any concerns, any complaints, you can always reach me. I am bradcast@bradblog.com, or you can and should follow us on the Twitters and the Facebooks at, what am I? The Brad Blog. There we go. Okay, lots to get to today. Lots of breaking news. I am joined, as ever, by Desi Doyen, my producer and co-host on the Green News Report. Hey, Des, how are you today?
Hey, I am doing well. How are you?
Well, we'll find out. Ask me in about 58 minutes. We will be hitting the Benghazi fun. More Benghazi fun for you today. Presidential politics, maybe even some listener mail before all is said and done. But first, this we do our Green News Report twice a week. Des, is that right?
Yes, it is.
I can't even keep track anymore. So, 6 minutes nationally syndicated report. We did our latest yesterday, and when we did the Green News Report, this story wasn't even on our radar. Literally, it wasn't even on our radar. Well, it might have been on our radar, but it was so small, nobody noticed. Now, within the past 24 hours, man, out of nowhere, the National Hurricane Center is warning about, quote, a potentially catastrophic landfall of what has become Hurricane Patricia. Now a Category 5 as we go to air. Authorities are scrambling to evacuate southwestern Mexico right now. Just 30 hours ago, Patricia was an ordinary hurricane, a tropical storm, maybe a Category 1, maximum winds of 60 miles per hour. And in those 30 hours, it has grown into a monster Category 5 storm, according to Brad Plumer over at Vox, one of our favorite climate reporters.
Yep.
Sustained winds nearing 200 miles per hour. And apparently, this hurricane is somewhat unprecedented in the historical record. Now, while we didn't cover Patricia yesterday in our Green News Report, we did cover the fact that this has been a record hurricane season, which a lot of people don't know. And a lot of climate deniers out there, climate change deniers, love to say, well, look, we have hardly had any hurricanes in the past whatever. The fact is, we've had a lot of hurricanes, not many, thankfully, that have hit the U.S. over the past couple of years.
Which is what the deniers are referring
to. Exactly.
They're only talking about U.S.
But whether they come ashore here in the U.S., has nothing to do with the number of storms out there. And as
exactly.
You reported on our Green News Report yesterday, we had how many were we looking at?
Over 22 this? So far this year, and the season is not over yet.
And that's a record, right?
Yes.
22. Chalk it up to the warming oceans, apparently, or at least that's what climatologists
yeah,
do.
Yeah, the oceans around the world, just FYI, are at record hot temperatures, the hottest that's ever been recorded so far.
Oh, there's that.
Yeah.
The hottest ever recorded so far.
Right.
The National Hurricane Center has now announced that it has sent reconnaissance aircraft into Hurricane Patricia and measured pressures of 880 millibars, which is the lowest ever seen in this particular region. And that makes Patricia, quote, according to the National Hurricane Center, the strongest hurricane on record in the Atlantic and the eastern North Pacific basins. The eastern tropical Pacific Ocean is unusually warm right now. Temperatures in the waters are 1 degree to 2 degrees centigrade above normal, which is how much do the do the math
it's
for
like
us
4
there?
4 degrees Fahrenheit. It's
yeah.
Yeah.
4
rough, very
4
rough.
To 8, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, is it 4 to 8?
Yeah.
Okay. Jeff Masters of Weather Underground points out that Patricia passed over an area of particularly warm water, warm, deep, and undisturbed water that is helping it to gather its strength. What happens in a hurricane is that they pick up speeds when they travel over warm water because the
that's
warm...
like giving them gasoline. That's their fuel. Warm water is what fuels hurricanes. So when you have record warm oceans, that's a lot of fuel for hurricanes. And then this particular area of the Pacific Ocean, right off the coast of Mexico, has not had a storm recently to have used all that fuel. So it's just been sitting there in the ocean waiting to be tapped and waiting to fuel Hurricane Patricia.
And when you say used all that fuel, when these storms travel over this
warm water, yes.
It stirs up, it churns up the colder water from the bottom, releases the warm water into the air,
into the atmosphere, and that
cools,
yeah, that churns it all up, and that's what gives that's how that energy happens and that energy transfer happens, and how Patricia became so intense so quickly. It's the fastest intensifying hurricane on record within 24 hours from zero to category 5 is really, really, really weird.
Now, the National Hurricane Center is currently forecasting 20 inches of rain in some areas. Life-threatening flash floods and mudslides, storm surges could cause waves as large as 39 feet high, according to officials. The World Meteorological Organization is comparing Hurricane Patricia to Typhoon Haiyan, which left more than 7,300 dead or missing in the Philippines back in 2013. This is, of course, back just 2 years ago, when climate change deniers in the U.S. who don't notice things that happen in faraway places like the Philippines were telling us, look, there's no storms. What climate change? 7,300 were killed in Haiyan back in 2013. Hopefully that doesn't happen here. Mexico authorities are trying to evacuate as quickly as they can from some of the most popular resort areas, such as Puerto Vallarta. They are right in the path of the storm at the moment as people race to get away. Brad Plumer notes that massive tropical cyclones don't just kill lots of people. They also ravage a region's economy for years after the fact. He cites a report by a couple of economists who find that historically the strongest hurricanes, quote, reduce per capita incomes by 7.4% 2 decades later, on average, effectively undoing 3.7 years of average development. I know as people are fighting to evacuate and we may have a big loss of life, it's somewhat cold of me, I suppose, to mention the economic.
Well, if people understand that, we've talked about this before, the long tail of a disaster, you know, there's the immediate hit and that's, you know, very tragic and awful. But what happens when the cameras go away, the media cameras go away, are the people that are left behind attempting to rebuild. That's the long tail. You have, you know, disease from destroyed municipal sewage systems. You have folks trying to rebuild who have to live outside, you know, for months, if not years in some cases. So these things have very, very long consequences for the folks that are unfortunate enough to be in the direct path of such events.
And I should note, you know, for Republicans in this country who happen to be the same people who are the climate deniers, right now, when the U.S. economy went over a cliff, that led to fewer people trying to come into this country from Mexico. Because, you know, we didn't have the jobs here to offer them. We've essentially had zero net immigration you know, over most of the course of Obama's presidency. But now the Mexican economy is about to potentially take a huge hit, which could lead to increased immigration, which is something we've talked about for years in the Green News Report.
Displacement, refugees.
We've not just talked about it, but this has been warned by the military that climate change leads to mass migration due to droughts, due to floods, due to worsening economic conditions. So you could see another wave of folks coming from Mexico into our country. And for all of those Republicans who hate Mexicans, well, there you go. You're welcome. Thank you, climate change. What are you people thinking?
Well, also, I just want to point out for the science basis of this that, of course, there is also the record El Nino in the Pacific, which is also fueling this. So we have, you know, the baseline of human-caused climate change that is lifting up the conditions, making them hotter to start with, and more water vapor in the air to start with, which makes more water available to dump anywhere that the rain is going to fall on. And we have a record El Nino, so that just basically turbocharges everything this year.
And, of course, six of the past 8 months in 2015 have been the hottest ever recorded across the globe. Six out of eight have been the hottest such months ever. Other than that, what global warming? Globe's cooling. What are you alarmists talking about? Buckle up. All right, from Mexico to New Mexico, Secretary of State Diana Duran has pleaded guilty now to embezzlement and other charges. On Friday, she abruptly resigned amid a fraud investigation that alleges she siphoned thousands of dollars from her election account and withdrew the money at casinos around the state. We have been covering New Mexico Secretary of State Diana Duran for some time on this program, even before she was indicted on 65 counts. Not just because we always warn you that you cannot trust, you should not trust your election officials. You should be able to oversee your own elections instead of having to rely on election officials. But also because Secretary of State Diana Duran was the first Republican elected in New Mexico to Secretary of State since 1928, and she has been purging the voting rolls. She has been pushing for photo ID restrictions on voters. She ran on the premise that she was going to stop fraud, voter fraud, before being charged with 65 counts of fraud herself. Duran pleaded guilty to the felony embezzlement charges and four misdemeanors. Sentencing will take place in December. Under the agreement, Duran cannot enter any casinos and must undergo treatment for gambling addiction. We highlighted a few weeks ago when she was charged how nearly $500,000 she had withdrawn from ATM machines at casinos around the state. Her critics have been appalled that as the state official in charge of regulating campaign finance, Duran would be accused of violating campaign finance laws in the state. She was one of New Mexico's highest ranking elected officials. She won a second term last year, incredibly enough, and began her career as a deputy county clerk in southern New Mexico in 1988, running on a platform of eliminating voter fraud. Fraud happens a lot in this state. That's why we need voter ID, Duran told the AP last year during a campaign event featuring GOP presidential nominee Mitt Romney.
Fraud happens a lot in this state.
Yes.
I guess she would know.
She would know. She's accused of misusing campaign donations by funneling some $13,000 into personal accounts and filing false campaign finance reports with her own office, which is responsible for enforcing New Mexico's elections and campaign finance laws. So she falsified her own reports. She put on a campaign treasurer, a former state senator, who had no idea that he was listed on her campaign documents as the campaign treasurer. But why worry? Why should Duran worry about that? She knew that she was filing those finance reports with herself. So who would notice? Well, someone did notice. The state attorney general did notice, filed 65 counts against her. to which she has now pleaded guilty and has now resigned. She went weeks being indicted with 65 counts without resigning from office as Secretary of State. So there you go. Another election official bites the dust. And if you go back and listen to our program from yesterday and the audio tape of that election official up in Ohio, Mahoning County, Ohio, freaking out when a voter asked, hey, can we get a hand count? Can we get a hand count of these paper ballots that we have? Because we don't know what went on this anti-fracking initiative that a poll taken right afterwards said should have been passed, but instead it got destroyed at the polls. We'd like to count the ballots just to know that everything was on the up and up. And that voter didn't even accuse the election official of doing anything criminal. Just, you know, wanted to know. Because sometimes those voting machines absolutely fail. Just wanted to make sure that the computer tabulators were correct, since no human beings actually bother to count the paper ballots, even when you have hand-counted paper ballots. And, of course, that election official freaked out. Said, you're accusing me of a crime, of rigging an election. No, we just want to oversee what happened. Once again, we are not attacking election officials here. Election officials, the best ones, and we had one of the best ones on the show with us to comment on this. Columbia County's election commissioner, Virginia Martin, was on us yesterday to comment on this whole affair. The best election officials in the world will tell you, no, don't trust me. I am not to be trusted. If you can't oversee it, you can't trust it. Well, there you have it. Another election official bites the dust. All right. Yesterday also on this program, I spent some time explaining why I was not particularly interested in those silly Benghazi hearings that took place yesterday. But promised if there was anything worth reporting from them, I would be happy to do so. Well, after almost 11 hours of testimony, man, after eight congressional committees, more investigations than were held for every other major terrorist attack in the last 20 years combined, The Select Committee in the U.S. House on Benghazi investigation completed its work some almost 11 hours into it. By the way, this committee alone has cost some $4.7 million to taxpayers. So if you're one of those so-called conservatives out there, I'm sure you're delighted that over $4.5 million of your taxpayer money was spent on this, with average staffers on the committee receiving $123,000 a year. This has been the longest such select committee ever, longer than the 9/11 committee, longer than the Watergate committee. And what has it discovered? Pretty much absolutely. The hours, by the way, that Hillary Clinton testified, almost 11 hours yesterday. George W. Bush testified on 9/11 to the 9/11 Commission when some 3,000 Americans were killed. He testified for 1 hour. So Hillary Clinton, former Secretary of State, testified for almost 11 hours. And this, of course, was her second. This follows 5 hours of testimony a couple of years ago.
It's longer than the Lord of the Rings trilogy, the extended trilogy, just want to say.
And by the way, I only saw one of those Lord of the Ring movies, and I can't believe how long that was. The first one I couldn't stay awake during. So this is longer than the entire trilogy. The first 5 hours or so were pretty much spent on some guy named Sidney Blumenthal, a political friend and family friend of the Clintons. That hours-long kerfuffle culminated in this exchange between the committee's Republican chair, Trey Gowdy, and the ranking Democratic member, Elijah Cummings, Democratic congressman from Maryland. This was just before the lunch break when Cummings pretty much said, hey, if you're so interested in this guy named Sidney Blumenthal, which nobody even knows why the hell you're asking about him, if you're so interested for some reason in the email that Blumenthal sent to Hillary Clinton Why not release the entire transcript of the deposition that was taken behind closed doors of Sidney Blumenthal? Here was this exchange between Democratic Congressman Elijah Cummings and Trey Gowdy.
I move that we put into the record the entire transcript of Sidney Blumenthal. We're going to release the emails. Let's do the transcript. That way the world can see it.
Well, we didn't.
Motion has been seconded.
Well, we're not going to take that up at a hearing. We'll take that up in a business meeting.
Mr. Chairman, I've consulted with the parliamentarian, and they have informed us that we have a right to a recorded vote on that motion. We want, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. Well, that's what we want to have. Let the world see it.
Why is it that you only want Mr. Blumenthal's transcript released? Why don't you
want
the survivors?
I'd like to have all of them released.
The survivors, even their names?
Let me tell you something.
Want that released?
Let me tell you something. Right now,
the only one you've asked for is Sidney Blumenthal. That's the only one you've asked for. That and Ms. Mills.
Cheryl Mills.
That's not true.
No, that's 2 out of 54. Now, if you want to ask for some fact witnesses,
ask for a recorded vote on the Blumenthal. You said from the beginning we want the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Why don't we just put the entire transcript out there and let the world see it? What do you have to hide?
What do they have to hide? Well, eventually they did vote. They did hold a vote on the committee to release the Blumenthal transcript from that deposition. And every single Republican on the committee voted against releasing the transcript for some reason. I don't know. I don't know what's in it. They haven't released it. If the Republicans are interested in truth, why wouldn't they just release it? I don't really understand that. Well, we might have gotten some explanation about what was in those in that deposition transcript with Sidney Blumenthal that the GOP now still refuses to release in their search for the truth on the deaths of four Americans at two different U.S. facilities at Benghazi on the night of 9/11/2012. Adam Schiff, a Democrat from California, in fact, my representative, offered some idea of why it is that perhaps the Republicans don't want to release this transcript that they took hours creating.
My seven colleagues do not want the American people to read what he said in his deposition. And I'll tell you, it's not because of anything he said. What they really don't want the American people to see is what they asked. Now, I can't release it myself, but I can tell you Sidney Blumenthal by the numbers. So here's Sidney Blumenthal by the numbers. Republicans asked more than 160 questions about Mr. Blumenthal's relationship and communications with the Clintons, but less than 20 questions about the Benghazi attacks. Republicans asked more than 50 questions about the Clinton Foundation, but only 4 questions about security in Benghazi. Republicans asked more than 270 questions about Mr. Blumenthal's alleged business activities in Libya, but no questions about the U.S. presence in Benghazi. And Republicans asked more than 45 questions about David Brock Media Matters. I have no idea what that is even, and affiliated entities, but no questions about Ambassador Stevens and other U.S. personnel in Benghazi. That's Sidney Blumenthal by the numbers.
So, Sidney Blumenthal has nothing to do with Benghazi. And the fact that they would hold a deposition behind closed doors and ask all of those questions about his relationship with the Clintons, the Clinton Foundation, Media Matters for America underscores once again that this is not a real investigation. This is a partisan political piece of theater. The "have you no decency, sir" moment, that came almost all the way at the end after more than 10 hours of public testimony from the Democratic Secretary of State, the former Democratic Secretary of State and the current Democratic frontrunner for the White House. Congressman Cummings' remarks led, frankly, to the first round of applause heard all day in the hearing room.
And I just, for one, want to thank you, and I appreciate what you've done. It has not been easy. You're right. It's easy to sit up here under these lights and Monday morning quarterbacking about what could have been, what should have done. You have laid it out. I think you have said this has not been done perfectly. You wish you could do it another way. And then the statement that you made a few minutes ago when you said, you know, I have given more thought to this than all of you combined. So I don't know what we want from you. Do we want to badge you over and over again until you get tired, until we do get the gotcha moment that he's talking about?
Yes, of course. That's what they want.
We're better than that. We are so much better. We are a better country. And we're better than using taxpayer dollars to try to destroy a campaign. That's not what America is all about. And so you can comment if you like. I just had to get that off my chest.
Senator Clinton, Secretary of State Clinton, did respond in kind to Congressman Cummings.
Thank you, Congressman. I came here because I said I would. And I've done everything I know to do, as have the people with whom I worked, to try to answer your questions. I cannot do any more than that. The answers have changed not at all since I appeared 2 years ago before the House and the Senate. And I recognize that there are many currents at work in this committee, but I can only hope that the statesmanship overcomes the partisanship. At some point, we have to do this. It is deeply unfortunate that something as serious as what happened in Benghazi could ever be used for partisan political purposes. And I'm hoping that we can move forward together. We can start working together. We can start listening to each other. And I appreciate greatly what you've said, Ranking Member Cummings.
After 10 hours of testimony, Chairman Trey Gowdy, the Republican chairman, was asked what new information that the committee received from Hillary Clinton's testimony in a press conference. He answered this way.
And
new things you learned today.
I think some of Jimmy Jordan's questioning. Well, when you say new today, I mean, we knew some of that already. We knew about the emails. In terms of her testimony, I don't know that she testified that much differently today than she has the previous time she's testified.
Man. Unbelievable. She hasn't testified any differently. They learned nothing new. Even Republican, that was the chair of this select Benghazi Select Committee. Even Republicans admit the hearings were pretty much a bust for the GOP and therefore a success for Hillary Clinton, I suppose. Bloomberg Politics reported that half a dozen lawmakers surveyed, Republican lawmakers surveyed, offered a, quote, muted response when asked about the hearings on Thursday. Many conservative commentators were unimpressed, if not angry, about the proceedings. MSNBC's Steve Bannon observed a few of them at one point during Republican Congressman Mike Pompeo's from Kansas, his attempt to question Clinton. John Podhoretz, a prominent conservative writer, former Republican speechwriter, said on Twitter, "Why doesn't Pompeo just go over and swear her in for president now? If he goes on like this, he'll practically get her elected." Eric Erickson, formerly of the right-wing Red State blog, lamented that the hearings proved a waste of time. Washington Examiner's Byron York characterized the hearing as very, very good news for Hillary Clinton. Daily Caller's Matt Lewis wrote that unless something happens, it's starting to look like Hillary Clinton won't merely survive this hearing. She will have come out on top. Right-wing hot airs Jazz Shaw said this hearing is turning into a disaster on wheels. Even Fox News abandoned coverage of the hearing in the afternoon, about 3.5 hours before it was actually finished, started covering unrelated topics despite their near obsession with the so-called Benghazi scandal for years now. As Kurt Eichenwald noted before the hearing began, this Benghazi committee has been investigating the attack for longer than Congress has conducted inquiries into Pearl Harbor, into 9/11, into Iran-Contra, into Watergate, and into the intelligence failures in Iraq. Worse still, he writes, Congress convened 22 hearings about the 9/11 attack that killed almost 3,000 citizens working in the World Trade Center in downtown Manhattan. This week, Congress is holding its 21st hearing about an attack that killed four people working in Libya, with many more sessions left to come for this committee. No previous assault on a diplomatic outpost has received this kind of relentless expression of congressional outrage. There weren't investigations, anything on this scale, about the attack on the U.S. Embassy in Beirut in 1983, where 63 were killed. On the U.S. Embassy annex northeast of Beirut in 1984, where 24 were killed. On the U.S. Embassy in Sana'a, Yemen in 2008, where 18 were killed. Republicans didn't believe that these exact same scenarios that took place under Republican presidents merited a similar zeal to dig down to expose some unexposed imaginary truth. In fact, writes Eichenwald, Benghazi was just one of 21 major assaults on an American diplomatic facility in the last 20 years. The personnel murdered there were among about 90 other Americans hired by the government to work in diplomatic outposts who were killed in terrorist attacks from 1998 through 2012. Apparently, their killings, like the deaths of thousands of Americans at Pearl Harbor and in the World Trade Center, were seen as less important than the murder of four people killed in a North African country in the midst of a government overthrow. Bloomberg Politics reported that to hear Republicans tell it, a series of unfortunate events culminated in a rough day on Thursday for the House Benghazi Committee, leaving conservatives to wonder if they've lost their most potent political weapon against Democratic presidential frontrunner Hillary Clinton. But I should add, never fear, because today, the GOP announced members of their new Select Investigative Committee, the Select Committee to Investigate Planned Parenthood. The pretend scandals continue in Congress. All right, a quick break. It never ends. A quick break, and we are back with more Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Stay tuned.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. Yes, it is the show that never ends. The Benghazi madness continues. This was actually something, and just one more piece on Benghazi here, and then we'll move on to sort of, kind of actual news. Not really. Presidential politics. That's in a moment. Andrea Tantaros on Fox News. Here's the thing. These people who have been propagandized for so many years over on Fox News to believe there is some scandal, there is something criminal here, there is some sort of wrongdoing, they're not going to be assuaged. They don't, you know, never mind that Hillary Clinton stood up for almost 11 hours yesterday answering questions. There is still some crime here. And they've convinced themselves of it. The email scandal, which is part of the Benghazi scandal, neither of which are actually scandals. But try telling that to someone on Fox News. Here was Andrea Tantaros just the day before ridiculous Benghazi hearing testimony of Hillary Clinton. Here was Andrea Tantaros on Fox News telling us what is going to happen with Hillary Clinton and her crimes.
When you look at the two scandals that we're facing, that all eyes are going to be on tomorrow, Benghazi and the email scandal, these are administration-wide scandals. All three of them, President Obama, Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, were there that night.
Wow.
This is their scandal as well. This email scandal is their scandal as well. There is no way, there is no chance that Joe Biden and President Obama and their national security team did not know that she was using a private server breaking the law.
There was no broken law. It was not illegal to use a private server. She is making stuff up, and yet this is what they believe. I believe that they believe this over on at Fox News. No, it was not illegal for her to use her private email. It was not illegal for her to use a private server. But that's what they tell their viewers, that there was some law-breaking, that the emails were illegal. They weren't. They weren't. Sorry. They just weren't. Tantaros went on to say, it's not just the fact that they knew about this illegal email server, both Clinton and Obama and Joe Biden. They all knew. They were all in on it. Not only that, they're covering it up.
This is why this is an administration-wide scandal that they are covering up. They are all in on this, and they are circling the wagons.
So that's what goes on Fox News. And normally I would say, okay, well, that's just Fox News. Ignore them. They're dopes. But Ben Carson, who is now apparently the leading presidential candidate, the front runner in Iowa, the first in the union caucuses will be held in Iowa. The very first votes in the 2016 election will be cast in Iowa, where Ben Carson now leads. More on that in a moment. But Ben Carson said the day before Hillary Clinton's testimony that he thought Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton might not be able to run for president at all because she could be in jail. Yes, Carson was asked on a Fox News radio program if he thought that Vice President Biden, who had dropped out that day, or who had decided not to run that day, if he thought it was going to be a Biden or Clinton who would be the Democratic nominee, Carson replied, quote, Hillary could well be in jail, and it's hard to run from there. Carson said that Clinton's personal email server or her handling of the Benghazi attack could result in jail time. As I said, Ben Carson is now the front runner, at least in Iowa, amongst the Republicans. A second poll now of Iowa Republicans has found that retired neurosurgeon Ben Carson has pulled ahead of Donald Trump in the state. Carson leads Trump now 28-19 among likely Republican Iowa caucus goers. According to a new Bloomberg Politics Des Moines Register poll released on Friday morning, Carson gained 10 percentage points in Iowa since the last Bloomberg Des Moines Register poll back in August, while Trump dropped 4 points. So after Trump has led in poll after poll for months, something's going on, at least in Iowa. And why Ben Carson is the one to replace him, I still couldn't tell you. I still don't understand. I really don't. I don't understand Ben Carson's popularity, and I suspect once the spotlight is on him, as it now will be, as he takes front-runner status in Iowa, more and more people are going to figure out how what a dope he is, and it's going to be akin to what we saw back in 2012 when Michelle Bachmann, then Newt Gingrich, then Herman Cain, then Rick Perry, one after another, had front-runner status.
The boyfriend of the week is how it came across to me last time in the 2012 election.
Yeah, yeah.
It went quite a bit quicker than it seems to be going this time. It does seem to have that same flavor, though, that, you know, oh, Trump is the most popular. Oh, now it's going to be Ben Carson. So we'll see if it follows that
I think Donald Trump is going to hang on among Republicans
for a while. Yeah.
I don't think he'll be the boyfriend of the week. I think Ben Carson will, though, I think once people see him. Although, you know what? Iowa is Iowa. Iowa is sort of on their own with their evangelicals, and maybe they'll just stick with Ben Carson, although I have no idea why. Because as soon as you hear Ben Carson speak, it's clear he has no clue what he is talking about. But, you know, this is the second poll now this week, finding Carson unseating Trump as the front runner in Iowa. A Quinnipiac University poll on Thursday confirmed. So you got two polls now confirming this. Carson led Trump by 8 points in that Quinnipiac survey among likely Republican Iowa caucus goers, which led to Donald Trump lashing out against Iowa just hours after the poll came out. He retweeted someone named My Green Hippo with the tweet, Ben Carson now leading in the polls in Iowa. Too much Monsanto in the corn creates issues in the brain. And Donald Trump retweeted that. Now, he claims it wasn't him. I don't believe him. He a few hours later, after people started noticing that he had just attacked Iowa Republican voters, Trump deleted the tweet, and he tweeted, the young intern who accidentally did a retweet apologizes.
I think what he's talking about is the young intern in his brain.
Yes, the young intern named
the 12-year-old
Donald
in his
Trump.
Dream.
Yeah. Because CNN had asked Trump back in August if he endorses the things that he retweets. And he said, well, I do retweets. And I mean, to a certain extent, do I? Yeah, I think that's right. Do you want me to say no? You know, I retweet. I retweet for a reason, Donald Trump said back in August, not mentioning that there was some secret young intern that was doing the retweets for him. In any event, following Carson and Trump in this new Bloomberg poll, 10%, just 10%, it drops way down to 10% of likely caucus goers who support third place now, Ted Cruz in Iowa, and 9% backing Senator Marco Rubio, with no Jeb Bush to be found. Yes, that's right. The death rattle for the Jeb Bush campaign continues as his campaign is undergoing a wholesale restructuring, slashing costs, and revamping the candidate's message in the face of low polling numbers and a general sense that he has underperformed. Oh, you think? This according to The Hill, which obtained a memo from the campaign discussing how they are slashing salaries for mid and senior level staffers, breaking up its organizational structure at their Miami headquarters, shifting resources to voter contact operations and cheaper personnel in early voting states. You'll recall this happened to Rick Perry. He started slashing costs, slashing the money, the payroll for those paid campaign workers, not long before Rick Perry ended up dropping out. Now, Jeb Bush has a lot more money because he got a lot more money early on, so he'll likely be able to last longer than Rick Perry, but we're seeing some similar moves here. The Hill reports that the payroll will be cut. The campaign will reduce payroll costs by 40%, according to this memo, with all but the lowest level employees taking pay cuts. The campaign will also cut back on travel costs by 20%, reduce overhead costs that are not associated with voter contact operations by 45%. The campaign will dramatically reduce the number of staff working out of the Miami headquarters, moving many workers, asking many to take a pay cut, and relocating many of them to early voting states such as New Hampshire, where Bush will now be focusing. It's a must-win state for him, or a must-not-embarrass-himself state for him, at least. Fundraising has slowed dramatically for the Bush campaign from the second quarter to the third. The internal memo is a clear signal to donors that the campaign is taking worries about the former governor's viability very seriously. Going forward, the campaign says it will place a special focus on increasing New Hampshire operations. One recent poll of New Hampshire found Bush in third place. Well, that's good. But trailing Donald Trump and Ben Carson very badly in that state. Bush campaign says they also plan to revamp the candidate's messaging. Well, that's good because he has sucked so far when it comes to messaging. The Bush campaign, however, I'm sorry to laugh. I'm sorry. I just have to laugh because they're going to redo the messaging here. But they are. Here's how they're going to do it. They will play up his experience and his reputation as a policy wonk on national security.
Oh, dear.
I know. All of his problems started. Remember a few weeks ago, all of his problems started with this question that he was asked by Megyn Kelly. Knowing what you know today, would you go into Iraq and take down Saddam Hussein? And he said, well, yes, I would. Now, that was like the first question he was asked at the beginning of his campaign after 8 years being able to ponder how he would answer this question. Knowing that it was the first thing that was going to be asked of him, since it was his brother who sent us on this horrible war for which we are still paying a terrible price today. And he couldn't answer the question. And yet The Hill is suggesting, or at least the Jeb Bush campaign is suggesting, that he has experience and reputation as a policy wonk on national security. Oh, and the campaign is also going to portray him as an outsider ready to fix a, quote, broken Washington. The outsider Jeb Bush.
I wonder if part of the strategy here is to try to hang on as long as they can until the Trump fever dream breaks.
It's got to be. I mean, it's their only hope. And good luck with that. Okay, a quick break. Oh, we didn't get to the news. There is a bit of news in the Democratic presidential race. We will hit that when we come back in our final few minutes with some listener mail. Looking forward to that. I'm Brad. This is your Bradcast. Stay tuned. Oh, yes, they are burning down. What a week. What a week we have had over this past week. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Man, what a week. The disaster in the U.S. House as the majority leader, Kevin McCarthy, dropped out, led to this vacuum, led to everyone begging Paul Ryan to get into the race. I shouldn't say everyone, but a huge number of Republicans begging him to get into the race. Joe Biden dropping out of the presidential race, or at least coming out and saying he was not going to run for president. 11 hours of Hillary Clinton testimony in the Benghazi hearings. And now a huge, as Donald Trump would say,
huge, and Bernie, a
huge hurricane about to hit Mexico, Hurricane Patricia. What a week! But amongst all of that, however, we had a Democratic candidate who dropped out on Friday morning. Lincoln Chafee.
Who?
Yes, Lincoln Chafee, the former Republican turned independent, turned Democrat. Lincoln Chafee, who everybody made fun of. Poor Link Chafee. They made fun of him after the first debate. I don't know why. I like Link Chafee. Seems like a nice guy.
He is a very nice guy. He's just not necessarily somebody, I think, who comes across as the kind of aggressive candidate that seems like these times demand for president.
Well, it also makes you wonder why a guy like him would be running in the first place. I don't know what he thinks, that there is a nation calling for a Link Chafee type out there. I don't understand. In any event, I'm glad he got in. I'm sorry to see him go. I enjoyed having him in the race, but he is gone. He follows Jim Webb, who is also gone. So now we have four, at least, Democratic candidates: Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Martin O'Malley, and don't forget, Lawrence Lessig is still in the race, the man who claims to be running for one reason and one reason only, to change campaign finance laws. I don't think he'll get into the next debate. He should, though. I'd love to hear his voice, man. I really would, on the debate stage. The more democracy, the merrier. Speaking of democracy and speaking of Paul Ryan, he has now accepted his party's draft to become the next U.S. House Speaker. Even though he did not get the endorsement from the so-called Freedom Caucus, he says, yeah, that's okay. I'll get in anyway. I got most of them. I got a supermajority. I'll take it. He has already caved to the demands that he had put forward, that he must get an endorsement from the Freedom Caucus. They're not giving him an endorsement. And that a bunch of rules must be changed to make it harder for any for the House Speaker to be deposed. They refused to change those rules, too. But he said, that's okay. I'll take it. I'm in. We'll see if he's in. We'll see if he can get the we know he can get the nomination from the Republican Party. That's going to come up October 28, I think. And then there's got to be a full vote before the House. The question is, can he get 418 votes total among the full House? And there are enough people in the freedom, so-called Freedom Caucus, used to be the Tea Party Caucus, that they could block him and keep Paul Ryan from getting a 418 vote majority. We will see if they do. Right now, I think he's got the votes, but the folks on the right are whipping. Folks on the hard right, folks like our guest a couple of days ago on this program, Richard Viguerie, who is saying over at Conservative HQ that House Republicans who support Paul Ryan are entering a toxic primary environment. First line, it's the primaries, stupid. In other words, he is threatening to primary people who establishment, what he considers to be establishment Republicans who support Paul Ryan. Maybe even he'll go after some of these Freedom Caucus people who seem to be turning on him. Richard Viguerie is, of course, the iconic, legendary godfather of the conservative movement, 82 years old. You can go back and listen to our program, our interview with him a couple of days ago about what the hell conservatives and Republicans must be thinking. Well, now they're thinking, at least the so-called far-right conservatives are thinking, that we must primary these people who are supporting Paul Ryan. Go back. It's an interesting interview, and I'd love your thoughts on it. We got a few thoughts from folks. Well, we got a number of thoughts, but I'll share a few with you that were sent to me. My email address, bradcast@bradblog.com. Fred G. says about my interview with Richard Viguerie, slick, slippery, really good himself at changing the subject and dodging the questions, and masterful at not mentioning that he protects the one percenters. He wants to, quote, cut spending, but anytime you move toward cutting the military budget, our most egregious example of spending, he cites, quote, terrorism or, quote, radical Muslims. Convenient, says Fred G. Gary K. writes to say, hi, Brad, I enjoyed your interview of Richard Viguerie. There's one issue in the conversation that you allowed Richard to snowball over you. Richard said several times that the U.S. debt is due to the Democrats' pursuit of uncontrolled spending. Presumably, the Republicans would have spent less. I get that you had him on the show to hear the conservative thinking, but the lies have to be challenged. We're all entitled to our opinions, but not to our own fact. Why didn't you challenge him with these three facts? The majority of the total U.S. debt came from one, two massive tax cuts for the wealthy in 2001 and 2003, two unfunded wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and three, Medicare Part D, which was unfunded, and a massive wet kiss to Big Pharma. The Republicans, he says, controlled at least one branch of Congress for 17 of the last 20 years. They didn't restrain spending so long as it benefited their war profiteers, billionaires, and corporate welfare. Conservative thinking is good to hear, but lies have to be challenged. Thank you, says Gary K. Well, in truth, Gary, thanks for that. I think I did challenge him, frankly, on as much as I was able to get away with, given the time that we had. But more important to hear what he had to say. But, you know, I don't know. Go back to the record. Actually, I think I did challenge him on spending issues, false equivalence issues. And frankly, I don't even think that had I challenged him, he would have said, yeah, I agree with you. The Republicans are just as guilty as the Democrats when it comes to spending.
Because they're not conservatives.
They're, as he sees it,
because he likes
yeah.
to make that distinction Correct. Between party people and what he considers to be true conservatives, which,
right.
you know.
Yeah, and I've had him on the show. Well, years ago, I interviewed him after he, you know, called for George Bush, Karl Rove, who was it, John Boehner, to step down at the time, back in 2007 or 2008. Because he says they were a disaster for the party. So he's come out against Republicans before, and I don't think that he blames Democrats alone for the spending. In any event, I take your point, Gary Kay, and much appreciate the note to bradcast@bradblog.com. In comments over at Bradblog, where we post every show in full, if you missed any portion of it, Nemo says, your guest's response on gerrymandering was basically, it's okay because the Democrats are just as bad. I'm hardly surprised a quote-unquote conservative would say that. It is the all-purpose excuse, especially if no fact-checking is involved. I'm not sure what value there is. There was supposed to be, and talking to this guy, does the Freedom Caucus need his approval to appoint a speaker? Well, actually, yeah, kind of. Kind of, they do. They follow what Richard Viguerie says. And finally, to wrap it up, Ernest A. Canning, he is our legal analyst over at bradblog.com. He was also critical of my interview. He says, apparently, we don't get enough of the propaganda and internecine battles of the multiple players within the extreme right wing of the Republican Party, from billionaire-funded think tanks, Fox News, and the MSM. Now you devote a full segment of listener-sponsored sponsored radio to a Richard Viguerie interview? That was Ernie Canning over at Bradblog. Well, yeah, I do. I think it's important that we hear what the hell these people are thinking. I think it's important, at least for me, because I don't understand what they're thinking. It's important for me to figure it out. And I feel like if it's important for me to figure it out, there's probably a few million others who would like to know what the hell these people are thinking. But apparently, there's a lot of people who don't want to know what they're thinking, and I'm good with that, too, and happy to share those emails. You can, as I say, find us anytime at bradcast@bradblog.com. You can and should also follow us on the Twitters and the Facebooks. I am The Brad Blog. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, today, to our booking goddess, Cynthia Cohn, and mostly my thanks to you, our listeners, for sharing a portion of your day or your night with us. We'll be back with you soon. Until then, did I cover everything? Yeah, download us. Download the full show at bradblog.com. Oh, stop by iTunes and give us a good review over there. It helps others find us as well. All right, that's it. I'm out of here. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.